Deathlands had mutated upward, or sideways, growing larger or more dangerous. But there were exceptions to that. There were more than a dozen of the little creatures, sitting in a patient row in the teeming downpour, big round eyes fixed on the humans, who had taken over their den. They looked about 18 inches tall, with round pot bellies. Their fur was a pale orange like desert sand, and it clung to them, matted and sodden with the force of the chemstorm. Their ears were pricked up in sharp points, and their stubby front paws were folded across their chests. None of them made a sound. Ryan glanced all around, peering out both sides in case there were any other, more threatening creatures waiting beyond their refuge. But the rain brought visibility down to about 30 short paces. The thunder was incessant, pounding at the brain, making coherent thought difficult. Ryan put down his Heckler and Coke, slipping his right hand onto the butt of the Sig Sauer pistol.
Where'd you...
Can't leave him out there. See if I can...
The rest of the sentence was lost in the rumble of the storm. Lightning was constant, making the night seem like it was floodlit. Ryan took a couple of cautious steps out of the garage, keeping his eyes fixed on the nearest of the little furry animals. He held out his left hand in a gesture he hoped would assure them of his kind intentions. The big brown eyes followed every movement, growing wider and wider, until it looked as if they might pop right out of their sockets. Not one of the animals moved as Ryan drew closer.
Come on. Come on.
The rain was ferocious, lashing in from over the river valley, tearing at his face like thousands of fine wires. Ryan licked his lips, suddenly concerned that this might be an acid rain that would blister and peel his skin. Apart from a hint of salt, it tasted normal. His hair was quickly plastered to his skull, making his face seem leaner and more brutal. The rain trickled down inside the eye patch, and he shook his head to clear it. The nearest of the mutated creatures was only 5 paces away from him. Though they were trembling, the fur quivering, they didn't seem particularly frightened of the advancing man.
Come here. Out of the cold.
He bent and reached out. His fingers touched the wet pelt, feeling its amazing softness. The animal made a little sound, but it didn't try to escape, and allowed the man to pick it up. One by one, he brought them into the relative warmth of the cavern, 11 in all. They were placed gently in front of the glowing fire to dry out. The little animals didn't try to struggle or run away, sitting where they were put, their round heads turning slowly and wonderingly to gaze at the 6 people. They seemed particularly fascinated by Christy Roth's flaming red hair. Ryan dried himself off, his shirt and pants steaming as he stood close to the warm fire. Lori picked up one of the creatures and cuddled it on her lap, whispering to it. The animal's tiny paws touched her gently on the arm, and its eyes rolled wider and wider.
Lovely and soft, and such fat little guts.
Jack grinned broadly at the row of animals, perched together, solemn-faced, like hairy, portly monks.
Huh. Fucking cute.
Yeah. They dried out yet?
Christy stooped and touched one, stroking her fingers across the long fur.
Seems dry to me, Ryan.
I can't believe we're about to do this.
You're welcome to the rest of the self-eats.
After they'd slit the throats of the cuddly little bears, they skinned them and roasted them over the fire. The little creatures made real good eating.
I beg your pardon. Considering how small those little furry bastards were, they had meat as tough as buffalo.
Doc sat down on the beach, tugging at his right boot. He took it off and shook a handful of grit out of it, then pulled the cracked knee boot back on. The wind had risen, and it snatched his stovepipe hat off, sending it rolling along the sand at a fine pace.
Why not let it be gone? It was old and smelling.
You think so, my dear dove of the north?
Sure.
The others watched amused as Doc rose to his feet and set off after the hat, proceeding like a stately galleon under full sail. His coat, an uneasy mix of gray, brown, and black furs, billowed about his shrunken shanks. His tangled hair skittered across his narrow shoulders.
Is he really going to dump that hat? I'll believe it when I see it.
Must be 200 years old, that hat.
Like throwing away part of history.
Get another easy. Shoo! Look him go.
The wind was teasing Doc, allowing him to get almost within reach of the black hat, then flipping it away so that it rolled on its battered brim, always just below his grasping fingers. Lori jumped up and down with excitement.
Go, Doc!
The hat spun into the lapping edge of the Hudson, where it gave up its flight and allowed Doc Tanner to pluck it. The old man stood there for some moments in silent contemplation, holding the hat and turning it around and around slowly, head bowed over it.
We must be saying goodbye.
All of them stopped what they were doing. Jack was beginning to untie the mooring rope. The river had risen a foot or more during the night, but the raft was still held securely. J.B. was putting the backpacks on the raft.
Adieu, old companion.
Taking the stovepipe hat by the rim and running a hand caressingly over the dent in its crown, he spun it far out into the main stream of the Hudson, where it settled like a broken-winged raven, floating the right way up. The river took it, revolving in a stately manner, carrying it away downstream to the south. They all watched it until it was only a small black blur against the deep blue-green of the water. As Doc rejoined them, the other five gave him a round of applause. Doc's cheeks cracked into a broad smile, showing his strong white teeth. He bowed in an old-fashioned, elegant manner.
My dear, dear friends, how can I thank you for your generous reception of my cathartic act? That hat was too much a symbol of my past, my long, long past. And now I look forward. When I remember to, that is.
Hordes of pale lilac asters thronged the sides of the river as they drifted south. The water was still as clear as crystal glass and filled with fish of all shapes and sizes. But after their feast on the small bears the previous night, none of the six felt hungry enough to try to catch any.
Must be close to New York, Doc. Light'll be going soon. It's so wide here that we might have problems getting a place for the night. And the city's rubble's supposed to be double bad, so they used to say.
I heard that in Moxon. The sec boss... Ugh.
I remember him. Strasser. Fire blessed, but he was a bastard fitted for 6 feet of mold.
Ryan indeed remembered the man well. It had been when he'd first met up with Doc Tanner. Strasser had been the sec boss in the Ville of Moxon. The Ville of Jordan Teague, the Baron. Strasser had always worn black, head to toe, and had a fringe of hair around a shaved skull. Thin was the word for Strasser. Thin body, thin face, thin eyes and lips. Lips that Ryan Carter had smashed to bloody pulp with a thrown blaster.
He talked about New York. He'd been there. Traded there. Drugs and children. He said they were all ghouls, cannibals, night crawlers, blood tasters, dark watchers, death lovers.
From what I hear, Strasser was right for once.
They passed another ruined bridge, its eastern section more or less complete. The shattered remnants of an old passenger wag hung poised on the brink, stuck there since the missiles had burned its driver to a crisp a century earlier. One day the rest of the bridge would rot through, and the automobile would plummet down with it into the ever-patient Hudson. A few minutes farther on, the river narrowed down from more than 2 miles across to less than one. On their right, the banks rose high in a series of wooded bluffs that Doc said he thought had once been called the Palisades of New Jersey. Now, at last, on the left, the six companions began to witness the silent, twisted horror of total urban destruction. No trees grew on the eastern bank of the Hudson, other than the occasional stunted ash or sycamore. Ryan's rad counter began to register softly, the needle creeping inexorably through the orange, and holding not far from the red, it showed a dangerous hot spot. The old Cross Bronx Expressway vanished behind them, swallowed up in the pale gray mist that came drifting in from behind the bluffs. It wasn't possible to make out anything still standing that even vaguely resembled a building. It was a rolling, melted sludge of concrete wilderness. Nothing remained higher than a tall man in that part of what had been the Bronx. They could only see two kinds of botanical life amid the ruins. Banks of nodding magenta fireweed, rising here and there far above the blasted sections of houses, shops, and offices, and an ugly, rank weed, a sickly green color with a tough stem that twined around itself as though it sought suicide by strangulation. As the raft drifted toward the eastern shore, they could see more clearly. The weeds had serried bristles like the skin of a hog, and they bore seed heads that were circular, letting poisonous yellow spores drift to the earth, like malignant paratroopers. Christie's face blanched with the horror of the vanished city.
Earth Mother, save us all. Is nothing left?
Might be some of the big blocks standing. Central Manhattan was zapped, but a few scrapers might have been big enough. I've seen vids of them, and they couldn't have been leveled.
But Ryan's voice betrayed his own chilling doubt. The desolation was total. Ryan thought he noticed an unnatural flurry of movement among the rancid weeds that crowded down to the very brink of the water, now only about 50 paces away from where the raft turned slowly on an eddy, moved by a long-submerged obstruction.
Push it away!
Ryan took one of the branches himself and pulled off, trying to shift back to the center of the current. Christie threw all her weight against the steering oar at the stern of the raft.
What do you see?
Nothing. Something. I don't know.
I heard something. Heard it. Like someone laughing, but someone who didn't have a proper mouth. Does that seem stupid?
No, not down here it doesn't.
Let's shove off. Be dark soon. Fog, too.
Yeah. Doc says we're only about 20 miles or so from open sea. Be good to make that.
Jack's unruly white hair was tied back with a ragged length of red ribbon that Laurie had given him.
Map is safe at night.
Could be. Map shows river gets double narrow. Could be chilled from either bank in good light.
So, we keep going?
He got nods of agreement from everyone. The mist became thicker, swallowing up the raft in gulps of sinuous gray damp. The long tendrils came in from their right, tasting of cold mud and still brackish water. The fog had an unpleasant odor that seemed to linger on the tongue as you breathed. Ryan glimpsed a teetering ruin through a sudden clearance of the darkening fog on their left.
Where do you figure we are now, Doc?
Doc rose from where he'd been sitting with his arm around Laurie. Pearls of moisture hung in his hair like a chaplet on the brow of a crazed monarch.
Damnably hard to determine, Ryan. No visual clues. Around level with the north side of Central Park, perhaps? Once I sailed clear around Manhattan on a pleasure craft, I felt like a Christian viewing the Eternal City. And now it is the Valley of the Shadow of Death. Hobgoblins and foul fiends have inherited the place. It is all despair.
It still wasn't full dark. The fog seemed to carry its own peculiar light, glimmering like corpse candles in a gruesome mire. The river now flowed so slowly that it was hard to detect any movement at all. Once or twice, they heard seabirds swooping above them. But they flew on with sheathed beaks, not bothering the six travelers. Christie told Ryan that she thought she could hear the steady thudding of a gas-powered generator, but the mist distorted noise, and she wasn't even able to tell which bank carried the sound. At one point, Ryan was certain he heard a dreadful, shrill, screaming laugh, definitely.